fighting for America.
Good morning, Treasure Valley.
Well, the Valley Women and Children's Shelter has been open since the beginning of February now. We are in need of pretty much everything you use in your day-to-day life, times about 500.
Fighting for Idaho.
Well, I just want to say thank you to you, First Miller, and the generous people of Treasure Valley for keeping the rescue mission lights on and helping us through the summer here.
Fighting for you.
Kevin, I want to say this, and I mean this sincerely. In English translation, that means I know the kind of man you are by the way you walk.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning.
Thank you all. I wish I would have dressed up.
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning. Thank you all for joining us. Our great friend Mike Baker with us, former ops intelligence person from the CIA. Your company is?
Diligence.
Diligence.
Yes, Diligence, for all your information and security needs. And that's a blatant advertisement.
And, you know, we have to pay for your appearance somehow.
That's it.
Well, and now you're on the new Travel Channel show, World Access.
Right. We did the first series last season. It was called America Declassified. That's going to be resurfacing on another network. Travel Channel decided they wanted something a little bit lighter, a little bit less dark than Declassified. So we're shooting a new show. I'm co-hosting a show called World Access, which is basically taking the viewers around the country. It's some fascinating stuff, some beautiful places that we're visiting, and some really interesting stories. But we're right smack in the middle of filming.
And, you know, we appreciate your priority to come here to the Kevin Miller Show at 580KIDO. It shows that you have your priorities in the right place, that you make time for us.
Absolutely. And the same with being living in Idaho now. I've got my priorities right.
That you do, sir. America Declassified, you're working on that as well. So, and that you have your business, and you're like everywhere on the Fox News channel. When do you have time for, like, you?
Yeah. Well, it's not so much me. It's more my fantastic, wonderful wife and our three little boys and my daughter. So it does raise a good question. It's been a lot of travel over the past couple of months. I think I calculated, although I'm not good at math, but I think I added up. And in April and May, I was home for 5 days.
Wow.
So it's a bit like the old job in a way. But once we finish the filming, then the demands of Diligence are not quite as bad. We have some great staff. They do most of the traveling, and so we do get a break.
You know, before we get in depth concerning the Bo Bergdahl situation, were you surprised, A, at the amount of people that said the heck with their non-disclosure agreements, and B, that the Department of Defense actually farmed out the intelligence work, or the CIA did, whomever, to a private company to find out what he was doing, where he was, and what was going on with the Haqqani network?
Yeah, nothing surprises me anymore in terms of people's willingness to open their yap and talk out of turn. That doesn't surprise me. I understand the frustration inherent with some of the individuals that served in his unit. I get that. But I'm never surprised. And in part, you know, it's the responsibility of those in charge. I think the younger folks the down the line have seen for a number of years senior military and intel and government officials talking out of turn. And I think that sets an awful precedent. And so it's very difficult to keep anything quiet anymore. It's very difficult to, you know, to get people to honor the agreements that they've made. But I do, at the same time, I'm conflicted. I understand how frustrating it might be for some of the characters that were out there serving with him when they're seeing a one-sided version of this.
Mike Baker with us here at 580KIDO. Let's get back to the skinny. Is this SOP, standard operating procedure, that the CIA or our intelligence, DOD, farms out the actual intelligence to a private group?
No, it's not. And that would be the DOD. Engaged in that sort of thing. And now, you know, it has been for a long, long time. There's been a healthy business inside the Beltway in Washington, D.C., supporting the mission of the Department of Defense, supporting the Pentagon. A lot of companies have made their nut over the years by doing various elements of intel work, analysis, and a lot of this oftentimes is blown up. What they're doing more often than not is sifting through data and coming up with analysis, strategic memos that are sort of a second, an add-on to what military intelligence and the internal units are doing. it's not a surprise. It's also a result of increasing budget cuts. I mean, we've talked about this in the past that, you know, the more you cut from defense, then the more likely it is they're going to have to go out and augment what they do, supplement what they do with private companies. That's just the reality of it.
Is there a difference between working, Mike, for a private company and the DOD or the CIA?
Well, as somebody who runs a private company, full disclosure, and there's that caveat. You know what? There are significant differences, yes. And we tell our clients all the time when people come to us for information support, say, look, we don't have the strength of the government behind us. We have to do things in a certain fashion. We have to always do things, obviously, appropriately. We have to do things within the limited abilities that a private company brings to the table. At the same time, you do have a lot of resources at your desk, and so you've got a lot of people who come out of the intel and defense world. They bring a lot of skill sets. You've got a lot of technology that you can bring to bear, but there are significant differences between what the government can do and is capable of doing through sheer resources and what a private company can do.
What type of individuals come to you? And again, not too much about Mike Baker and Mike Baker Incorporated, but, you know, we read about people like you. We see them on TV. We actually get the chance here at 580 KIDO with Kevin Miller in the morning to talk to you. I mean, is it like what we see on TV? Hey, I've got an issue in Uzbekistan. I've got an issue here.
Yeah, you know what it is, in a sense. What we do at my business is, you know, a lot of information, a lot of intelligence, a lot of competitive and strategic intelligence gathering, a lot of security and risk mitigation support, trying to prevent bad things from happening, trying to take advantage of opportunities. And so oftentimes, yeah, a company will come and say, look, we're considering doing something in, you know, pick a fourth or fifth world country. You know, what are the things we need to worry about? Who should we be dealing with? How do we keep ourselves out of trouble? What's the competition doing there? And for, quite frankly, U.S. companies and British companies are at a significant disadvantage in the world right now. We have what's called the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which the FCPA, which is brought to bear on U.S. companies constantly by regulators. And the idea being is that, and it's proper, is that you can't go overseas and just do whatever you want to secure business or to keep business. Now, having said that and having agreed with what the FCPA means, because we end up enforcing it a lot and working with companies to make sure they don't get in trouble, at the same time, every other country out there is doing whatever it takes to get business. So we're operating at a disadvantage. And so oftentimes what we're doing is we're advising our clients what it is exactly that the French are doing or whomever are doing to pay off the locals to get licenses or to get contracts. And it can be very frustrating. But again, there's a reason for these regulations. It's important to behave in a certain fashion overseas.
Mike Baker with us. Kevin Miller in the morning at 580KIDO. Let's talk a little bit about maybe some of the countries that that are always in the news. China.
Yeah, that's a good one. China has, I think it's interesting because for decades now, China has been engaged in very aggressive, very consistent, very well-resourced economic espionage. And it's possible. Everybody talks about the Chinese economic miracle. And you can have an economic miracle if you're willing to steal everything. Now, that sounds harsh, but the facts are that the Chinese state, primarily through the People's Liberation Army, the PLA, and their intelligence organizations, have engaged in the theft of intellectual property, of research and development information, critical information, not just from us. The good news is that they're equal opportunity, so they go after everybody, not just the U.S. But they've been engaged in this for years and years and years. And their idea was, let's just skip the costly, labor-intensive, and time-intensive effort of research and development and go straight to the chase. And they've been very, very successful at it. We could spend hours talking about how they conduct themselves. They've got over 50 academic institutions out there funded by the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, that are designed to do nothing but identify, develop new ways, more efficient ways of economic espionage. They've got over 24 information warfare units that do the same. They are a very aggressive entity out there. So it's nice to see us kind of calling them on it. And recently there's been some information in the media that's surfaced. It's a little bit after the horses run out of the barn and then around the paddock and back down the road. And,
yes.
You know, head across state, but at least it's something.
Mike Baker, though, can we realistically, as someone who has been in the field, still in the field, while you're not being a family man in Idaho and your multimedia platform, are we psychologically set up to handle the onslaught from the PLA?
Well, that's a great question. That's a really great question. The short answer is we are really slow to the game. We have for years and years and years had a church-state separation. And people may not believe this. Certainly the people that are inclined to consider someone like Ed Snowden a hero, they're not going to believe what I'm about to say. But for a long time, we've had this separation between what the intel community gathers and obtains and our private sector. The idea being, if we find out something that a foreign state or company is targeting one of our companies, if we advise them of that, then maybe we're prejudicing the other companies in that sector by giving this one company information. And so we've never done that. It's always been this, no, we have to keep a hands-off approach. Now, that's a real detriment to our national security, because economic information, economic intelligence is national security nowadays. It's a very small world out there. And we are coming around to this. We are getting a little bit better. There's a better public-private sector cooperation that's been developing over the recent past. Congress is more aware of these problems, and so they're actually trying to do something despite their dysfunctional nature. And so, yeah, I guess I let out my thoughts on that one. And so it has been a problem. I'm hopeful that it will improve. But every other, as an example, every other intelligence service out there, the French, the Russians, the Chinese, the Venezuelans, the Chileans, you pick a country. And part of their remit, part of their responsibility as an intel service is not only to protect their private sector, but to promote it, to improve it, to enhance it, to strengthen it.
Right.
They're all out there gathering information deliberately to help the companies within their country. And we haven't done that. And that's a real problem for us, competitively speaking.
Mike Baker with us. Will we survive? We will find out more about that coming up. We'll talk with Mr. Baker about Edward Snowden. We'll talk to him about Bo Bergdahl as well. You can catch Mike Baker on World Access and the Travel Channel, reruns of America Declassified, anytime really on the Fox News Network. You can catch him whether he's vacationing or filming the palm trees and everything else. We're not kidding. I see him all the time. Much more, and even the local channels as well, much more coming up with Mike Baker here. Kevin Miller at 580KIDO. It's time to get you to work safely and on time. We always pride ourselves on giving you news, opinion, information each and every morning. So let's get you to traffic and weather.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays noon till 3 on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580KIDO, Kevin Miller, Mike Baker joining us from World Access, America Declassified. With the usually we talk about your former employer, the CIA, yeah. Your private company. We can't give you enough recognition about that. Enough. What is their name again? I know you're very modest.
Yeah, I mean it's called Diligence. I appreciate you bringing it up. Yeah, and it's a global information security company. Wonderful people. We've been really lucky over the years. I think the key to starting a business, and my partner and I that started this, we had no business experience, and we were given some advice, which is. Don't micromanage and hire people that are smarter than you. Luckily, there's a lot of those. That pool is pretty deep. And so we've been fortunate, and all the people we brought on, they're wonderful.
Let me ask you another thought here. What's the state of the CIA today compared to you back in the day?
Great people. I'm not one of those folks who stands around and says, oh, you know, in our day, we did things better and differently. And we were, I think that's not true. I know some great people in there, and there's always been terrific people in the organization. Now, obviously I'm subjective and people are listening and thinking, yeah, what else is he going to say? But it's a terrific organization. It's a small organization compared to, most of the government bureaucracies. The operations group is staffed by people, as are the other directorates, that come into work every day and don't expect anything. They don't expect any recognition. They expect no spotlight. They're certainly not doing it for the money. And it's a challenging, unique, exciting opportunity. And I think that there are certain differences between now and when I was in, primarily a result of the way that we've focused over the past dozen years on on Iraq and Afghanistan, frankly. So we've always had a paramilitary organization. We came out of World War II, the old OSS, and our paramilitary organization is fantastic. And I can't say enough good things about how we operate. But at the same time, the job of the agency, the core part of the agency, is to steal secrets. It's to take information that's critical to our national security interests. We're not just out there stealing whatever, despite, again, what people who love Snowden might think. They're getting a very one-sided view of it. But it's in a very selective fashion. Your job is to steal secrets that protect our national security interests. And as a result of Iraq and Afghanistan, we've kind of swung away to some degree. I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but we've sent a lot of officers, young officers, straight out of training into the field, into theaters that don't actually involve traditional espionage. They don't involve covert communications. They don't involve recruitment of assets in this traditional sense. You're sitting in a base. If you're going to go out and have a covert meeting, well, you got to take a fire team with you, so it's not very covert. You're working a lot with liaison, which is important, but typically that's a track that you go on. So I'm worried to some degree that we've brought up a generation of officers, men and women, who, while doing incredibly important and difficult work, it's not necessarily the prime directive for the agency. And we're going to have to recalibrate this now as we're winding up in both locations. And I think that's going to be a little bit difficult. But it's a terrific organization. People are great. The mission remains the same in a sense, despite what I just said. So I don't see a lot of differences. I'm not one of those people that say, oh, it was different in my day and we were much tougher. And I don't think that's true.
The difference between human and computer/satellite intelligence, which do you prefer? Which is superior?
Well, human intelligence is always going to seal the deal. That's always going to be the holy grail. Signals intelligence or technical support is incredibly important, and at times is all you can get. But if you really want to understand what it is that someone is thinking, you have to have humans. You have to have a human source in there inside the tent, looking at the individuals in that meeting, coming back out and reporting and telling you as an asset what the context of it was. What were these people thinking? What was the body language? What were they, what were they implying? All these things that you can't pick up necessarily from signals intelligence oftentimes. So, ideally you got both in your kit bag and you can make use of both. Sometimes you don't, but if I had to rely on one thing, it would be human intelligence. I would like to corroborate it with more than one source. And we've seen in the past on occasion how that can go wrong when you have limited human sources. But you want a balance of both, ideally. Sometimes we switch. Sometimes we go on these cycles where we think, okay, it's all about signals intelligence, so it's all about S&T. And so that's where our money's going. We're going to cut our personnel staff. And I'm worried we may be heading in that direction now with the drawdown, that we may think, well, we don't need all these people. Maybe we'll cut back a little bit. It takes a long time to turn the ship. So you reduce the numbers of your operations officers, and then you say, we've got to ramp up again. We saw what happened after 9/11. It takes time. You can't just do it. There's a long training process involved. So it's not good enough to cut your force and then say, okay, now we want to ramp it back up now for next month. That's not how it works. So we have to be a little bit more thoughtful about how we do things. I don't think that's going to happen because we're talking about Washington, D.C.
Mike Baker with us, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. Building upon that, though, how do you tell if somebody's lying to you?
Well,
you've been there.
Yeah. I mean, there's a soft science to this that sometimes, you'll run across a company or, individuals who talk about this issue, and they'll talk about it as if it's a hard science. It's just factual, and it's really not. First and foremost, if you want to, start to understand if someone's lying to you, you need to have as many facts in your back pocket as possible. So you need to do your homework. And this is true whether you're going into a business negotiation or whether you're going into an interrogation. So that's important. If any of you listening out there are going into an interrogation, keep this in mind. but it's just one of those things where you need as much information so that you can, during the course of whatever conversation you're having, you can mentally fact check what you're hearing. And you can corroborate with what's been said in the past or the information that you may have access to. And then there are some tells. People talk about that in poker all the time, that they can read people's body language. And I think there's a little bit to it. I've seen people beat the polygraph. I've got a lot of respect for the polygraph, certainly the way that our organization does it, but it's not black and white. It's not a science. It's a tool. And, you know, it depends entirely on the capabilities of the operator, of the polygrapher. Sometimes it works very well. Sometimes it doesn't. And part of it depends on the personality of the individual. If you're a psycho, you're going to beat the polygraph. If you're a Puritan or a Quaker, you're going to always have trouble with it because you're going to feel guilty about everything. So there's an element of this soft science in there. So basically those are issues that, you know, I don't know that anyone's out there able to always tell when someone's lying, but do your homework, understand the subject matter, understand the nature of the person you're talking to, take the time, think about the body language a little bit, I suppose. And then if you can't polygraph them, sleep deprivation works well.
There you have it. Things you won't hear anywhere else. Our friend Mike Baker with us. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Well, we'll keep you informed here. More coming up with Mike Baker, plus the news. Keep it here. Stay informed. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Sean Hannity, weekday afternoons at 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller here with you. Mike Baker joining us as we talk more about his life, his history. Forget Jack Bauer or Carrie from Homeland. You're our hero.
Thank you. I think you're a terrible judge of character, but that's fine. I appreciate you saying that. The heroes are all around us. I tell you one group that I have a huge amount of respect for is during the course of this filming for World Access on Travel Channel that's coming up in the fall, I spent some time down at one of the fire academies with firefighters going through the training. And, I mean, everyone's obviously got respect for them regardless, but I walked out of those training sessions with an incredible amount of respect for the men and women that do that job. I had my backside kicked, and we spent the time going through burning buildings, hauling hoses up multi-levels. It was incredible, and you know what these guys and what these women go through is phenomenal. So there's somebody that falls squarely in the hero category.
Bo Bergdahl.
I knew you were going to bring this up.
Figured I'd wait for a while.
Yeah. How conflicted is this? First of all, I suppose there's the. It's not even a notion. It's a belief. It's a promise that we don't leave anybody behind, and I believe that you don't leave anybody behind, regardless of what circumstances there are. There's also the notion that we don't negotiate with terrorists. Not that that hasn't been done before. It has been done before. The Israelis have done it on a number of occasions. We have done it. Iran-Contra was basically a negotiation over hostages, in a sense. Now, you know, I think the problem we've got with Bo Bergdahl and his situation is that for almost 5 years we talked around this issue. Right. For all this time, we knew there was this elephant in the room that at some point, if we were lucky enough to get him back, that we were going to have to deal with it. And now we have to deal with it. And that is the circumstances surrounding his capture. The only person who knows exactly what happened is Bo Bergdahl. This, you know, and obviously there's been some talk from former members of his unit. That's fine, but they don't have direct knowledge of exactly what happened. Now military intelligence knows what's happened. I would suspect that they've dealt with that issue already, even though they're taking their time and they probably will not release anything for some time as they try to figure out what to do. So my feeling has been a lot of the speculation that's been out there is completely unhelpful. I will say it's been remarkable how quickly people with no experience in the military or in difficult environments have been to convict him. And just say, you know, this is the way it is. I say let the military intelligence and military officials do their job, and the chips will fall where they may. I don't see how we can deal with it in any other fashion. If, in fact, he walked off the post, if he deserted in a combat zone, then that will be dealt with.
Mike Baker with us here. What did you think of the video of his release?
Well, it was well scripted by the Taliban. I mean, they don't live in a cave, so they understand exactly how these things work in terms of social media and public relations. They clearly knew they were going to release this thing shortly after his exchange. And So it was a very well, so from their perspective, again, it's not a Hollywood movie, but it was a very well scripted propaganda piece. There were no real surprises. I didn't see any real surprises. They controlled the environment. They controlled the time and place of release. So all these people who say, oh, my God, the chopper landed in a valley and these people didn't, you know, properly pat him down and everything. You know, there's all this second guessing that goes on
right.
from people who a lot of people who have very good experience. But, that you know, there's the, what you would like to happen in the ideal world. And then there's the real world and the way that things work. You know, the Black Hawk, you know, from the time that it rocked up on the site to take off was less than a minute. And, you know, their job was to take control of Bergdahl, get him to the platform and get off the X. That's their job. You know, very difficult, very strenuous environment. Now, what we had going for us was that the Taliban wanted this to work. They got five very important cats back, two in particular. So they had every incentive not to have this thing turn into a goat rope. They wanted this thing to work. So that's in our favor. You know, I think that there, you know, the way that Bergdahl looked during the course of that video was exactly consistent with someone who's been in captivity for a long period of time. Physically, he was degraded. Mentally, you know, his body language, he looked like a deer in the headlights. Didn't know what was going on. And, you know, again, the guys that handled the exchange from our side did a very thorough job. I mean, you know, again, there was much talk about, well, you know, they patted him down, but it was just very brief before they put him on the chopper. What if, you know, there had been a setup? They did what they needed to do to get out of there, and that's all that counts, field expediency. And I'm not going to second guess, you know, people putting themselves in these very, very difficult situations. It doesn't make any sense to. But I thought the video was very interesting, but totally expected.
I'm sure there was some backup Apaches and AC-130s circling around if it did go bad.
Oh, yes. There would have been support very quickly. And you know, the Taliban, you know, again, they don't operate in a bubble. They understood that. But they had real incentive. They got back, two of the five. One was the deputy intel minister for the Taliban, and one was the deputy defense minister for the Taliban. To say that they are not going to get back in the fight, not going to be operationally, strategically important to the Taliban is nonsense. But the White House did what they did, you know, and there you go. I don't know that we can it's one of those conflicting issues. That's why everyone's having so much difficulty framing it, because on the one hand, we got our guy back. The circumstances surrounding his capture, that makes it so difficult. We hate the fact that we gave up these five Taliban. I would love to think that we will actually either kill or capture them in the near future to kind of clear the slate a little bit. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to live a pretty nice life in Qatar for a period of time. And then I don't believe they're under house arrest of any sort, you know, even though they say, well, they're going to be monitored. These guys are going to be back in the game before we know it.
More coming up with Mike Baker here, Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. We held off on Bo Bergdahl, and you've heard Mike throughout the hour here, and if you've missed it, you can always catch the podcast at 580KIDO. We've talked about everything but the one remaining person that Mr. Baker has talked about quite some time, whether he's on Fox News, whether he's on all these shows, and that is Edward Snowden and his big public display of that he was a super secret agent. Mr. Baker will talk about that. We'll take your emails, your phone calls on this, coming up here at 580KIDO. But again, we always pride ourselves on making sure you have the newsmakers, you have the opinion makers, and you have the information you need to get to work, and that means safely and on time. Of course, weather from our friends at Channel 7 from the Channel 7 First Alert Weather Center. But before we get to Channel 7, let's get to traffic now at 580KIDO. 580KIDO, Mike Baker here with us, Kevin Miller in the Morning. Okay, we've held off your boy, Edward Snowden.
My boy.
Your boy.
Now he's my boy? Wow. Last time I talked about him on TV, I almost blew a stent right out of my backside on this one. He's recently had that interview where he came out and said, you know, I was trained as a spy in the traditional sense. And it's interesting. I mean, that's a fascinating tell. We talk about, you know, how you can tell people are lying. There are a couple of characteristics of people who betray trust. And regardless of whether you like Snowden or you don't, you'd be hard-pressed to argue that he didn't betray trust. He had signed oaths. He had taken oaths. He had made promises. And he betrayed that. Now, whether you think that's honorable in some fashion or not, there tend to be two things that circle around people who do this, whether you're talking about Snowden or Edley Howard or Jim Nicholson or Pollack or Hansen, any of the characters in our past. One is that they have an overinflated opinion of themselves. They view themselves in a world that's somewhat disconnected from reality in terms of their importance or significance to the, particularly to the organization where they work. And the other is that they feel disrespected. They feel as if somehow the organization or the country or their supervisor has not given them the credit that's due. And those two things you see time and time again in these characters who commit this sort of act. His comments about, no, I was actually a spy. Look, I did this. I was traditionally trained. I think is an indication of the fact that he has this opinion of himself, and he's been sitting in Moscow, the bastion of free speech, and listening to the media talk about his position, which was he was an IT sprog. He was an IT administrator, a very important job, of course, anywhere. But that's what he was doing. That's why he had the ability to take the information, was because he was inside the system. He had been given that responsibility. He had been given the trust to have that internal access to the IT systems. And that allowed him to beaver away in there with intent to steal the information. So he sees all of that. He sees himself being referred to as an IT administrator, and that frustrates him because he, in his mind, he's something much more than that. So he comes out with this. It's complete crap when he talks about how he was trained as a spy. And I think he was conflicted. He was trying to say, well, but in a traditional sense, meaning, you know, I had a classified job. Well, sure, yeah, as do maybe hundreds of thousands of people nowadays have classified jobs where they handle some classified information of some nature, whether secret or top secret, and that he worked overseas. Well, sure, yeah, lots of people do. That doesn't make you a spy. That makes you a government contractor or a government employee. And so I think that's what he was trying to say when he was in a traditional sense, perhaps. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and say he wasn't actually saying that he was trained as an operations officer. He's also misusing the terminology. When he says he's a spy, we're not spies. We're operations guys. We're operations officers, intelligence officers, whether we're with the CIA or military intelligence or wherever. A spy is someone we recruit. So we identify a nuclear scientist working in North Korea. We recruit him. He's now a spy. He's an asset of ours. He also talked about he misused other terms like sources and methods and other things. So I think that he's a confused young man. I'd like to see him brought back and put through the criminal justice system. I don't know whether that's going to happen or not. Putin's enjoying this too much, you know, sticking this in our eye periodically. And, you know, information has been very damaging and destructive to our national security interests.
What's his life like in Russia, do you believe? We see him with Brian Williams and really sending the wrong message. But what do you think his life is like realistically in Russia?
Well, I think a good case study to look at to understand that question, with some modern elements thrown in, would be Lee Harvey Oswald.
Wow.
Remember, Lee Harvey Oswald went over to Russia, and he eventually came back because he had such a disillusionment over there in Russia. He ended up getting married while he was there, but he came back, brought his bride back, and then not too long after he assassinated Kennedy. But I think you could look at the lifestyle of Oswald in the sense that here was a guy who came over, defected to the Russians, essentially, which is basically what Snowden has put himself in that position now. And the Russians are like, yeah, okay, you're not important to us, but, you know, we got to do something with you. they put Oswald to work in a radio factory.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's what Snowden's doing, but it's not a bad analogy, even if I do say so myself. I just realized, oh, hold on, let me pat myself on the back. Nice analogy, Mike.
Mike Baker with us. Final moments here at 580 KIDO. What do you make, again, as someone who has been in the field, still in the field with your private company, that NBC makes him into the primetime special, must-see TV? Doesn't that send the wrong message?
Well, I think it sends a message that, you know, TV's willing to do whatever they feel is going to garner ratings. And so, you know, from that perspective, it's perfectly understandable. And I get, again, I get the fascination with Snowden. I understand, you know, those people who view him as a hero, maybe at worst a whistleblower. I understand why they think that way. I don't agree with it, but you know, that's based on your perspective, on your life experiences. So my life experiences are one way, therefore my perspective is a certain way. I've spent a lot of time looking behind the government curtain. Other people have different life experiences. Their perspective is going to be different. That's fine. We need to be able to have those conversations. And so I'm not one of those people that believes that screaming at each other is going to make any difference. I think that's the problem we've got with Washington right now. There's nobody willing to sit in the center and talk and say, you know what, the idea over here on the left is good. The idea over here on the right is good. I bet if we smush them together, we're going to actually get something that's going to work. We don't seem to do that anymore. So I get why people, those who are supportive of Snowden, I think I understand why they are. Again, I don't agree with it, but I'm happy that we have these conversations. I don't think he's a hero because we're having this conversation. The way we should be having this conversation is through politicians doing their job up on Capitol Hill, asking tough, inquisitive questions during their committee meetings with NSA and others, you know, every year, and talking about it, and then not expressing surprise when they find something that's not politically expedient.
Mike Baker, as always, we appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you very much. It's always a great opportunity. I love the conversations on here, and thank you very much, Kevin.
Let's get to traffic now at 580KIDO. Have a great day at work. God bless and keep the faith, everyone. Serving Meridian.